Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
It was gale force winds at the Abbey on Saturday as Storm Wesley came to town and swept Accrington off the park. Welcome to this week's Under the Abbey Stand, where we'll try not to spend the whole pod talking about Wes tumbling into that acrobatic celebration at the exact moment that Posh were tumbling down the championship table. Let's just say a great minute to be a Cambridge fan. As always, I'm joined by CB5's finest footballing brains, depending on how you define finest. First up, it's the view from the Habin. It's Jordan Warland. Jordan, have you ever been so pleased to see a red Wesley warning issued by the Met Office?
Julian Roberts starting the pod with banter. It can mean only one thing. Cambridge United won on Saturday.
I couldn't even deliver that line properly because I was cringing out at it, just reading it back. So but anyway, it's lovely to have you, George.
Talking about storms, though, how he stormed up the pitch in the 95th minute, absolutely busted a lung. Absolutely sensational to watch. And I'm not sure, and I say this as someone who is firmly in the mid to late 30s, I'm not sure doing a forward role is advisable at our age, but it, you know, 10 out of 10 for that as well.
It'd have been very it would have been very Cambridge United if he'd have managed to break his neck in the process or something. And as always, as reliable on the pod as Wes Houlihan's left foot, it's Tom Walker. How's that 11-point gap feeling for you, mate?
Yeah, it's feeling good. It's feeling good. I was, I guess people listening to this will have been, you know, as they downloaded the episode and started playing it and listened to the intro music, they'd have been wondering how many Storm-related puns can they get in the first minute? And I think the answer's about four. So, we're doing pretty well on that front and I'm enjoying being 11 points clear.
Have you got anything, any Storm puns to add to it, or will they sort of come later on? Is there sort of forecast for more Storm puns later on in the pod?
This is going to get tiresome quite quickly.
I think it's already tiresome. Let's dive straight into the football then. Let's get off the topic of Storm Wesley for now. Let's get straight into yesterday's game, home to Accrington. This week we've got no midweek to talk about, but there is still plenty of talking points. Let's start nice and general with you, Jord. Considering some of the fixtures we've got coming up, especially towards the latter end of the season, how important are 3 points was this for you?
Julian Roberts, yesterday was hugely important for me, for my happiness and my well-being, for seeing in real life, not on iFollow, a Wesley Houlihan goal. I didn't make it to Fleetwood. Some crazy people say that it wasn't his goal at Fleetwood, but it was a relief to finally see it happen. Like, all I wanted this season was for us to stay up, Borough to come down, and see a Wes goal in the flesh. It's not too much to ask, and we're on our way. To answer your actual question about how important the 3 points were, hugely important. And I think there's two ways to look at it. Number one is the immediate sort of upcoming fixtures, which are pretty difficult. And we'll touch on that later in the pod, but also looking at the final third of the season as a block. So 15 games after full time at Burton, the first one of those yesterday. And in those 15 games, we play everyone currently occupying a position between 2 and 9 in the table, including Wickham twice. So with that in mind, you look at what else we've got coming up fixture-wise. You look at the fact that our home form has been really good, and you would say there's 5 home games starting yesterday where you've got to say we have to be targeting those for getting points, have to target those to be competitive. In no particular order, these are teams like Accrington, Morecambe, Shrewsbury, Cheltenham and Charlton. Realistically, I think on the march to 50 points, you've got to say we should be looking at a minimum of 9 points from those. So to start that little mini league, that little mini run of five home games with 3 points against a very good Accrington side, an Accrington side who beat Oxford recently and beat Crewe quite handsomely the game week before us, and a physical Accrington side, hugely important, hugely important 3 points, my friend.
Also, all those three things that you wanted to happen this season, they pretty much happened in the space of about a minute yesterday.
I'm pretty much going to stop going to games now. That's me done.
Much it. I mean, I'm on also, the beach. If one of the things you wanted this season was to see a Wes Houlihan goal in the flesh, what better goal, apart from scoring directly from a corner, could you wish to see? Him nutmegging a defender and slipping it in the bottom corner. Tom, let's come to you. The game itself, it was, as Jordan mentioned, it was they're a very good side, Accrington, at this level, right? That's something that any sort of League One supporter knows. They're probably a bit harder opposition to face at their place than they are travelling, especially if you look at their home and their away form. But nonetheless, they're a decent side. Do you think it was obviously tricky conditions yesterday with the wind and the storm that we've obviously started the pod with? Do you think it was quite a clever performance in many ways? Obviously, we rode our luck at times, but do you think there was sort of a part of a game plan to sort of ride your luck a little bit first half, get in 0-0 and then use the conditions second half to capitalise?
Yeah, definitely. I think they're a difficult opposition to play in conditions like that because they are a physical team. Maybe at times going a little bit too close to the line of what is physical and what is just, you know, sort of shithousery, basically. But yeah, I think we did well to sort of contain them in the first half. I'm not sure how much of that was imposed by the conditions and sort of how much that sort of contributed to them being on top and sort of controlling large parts of the first half. And then, you know, it was almost complete role reverse in the second half, I think. I think barring one or two sort of moments at the end of the game, Accrington had pretty much nothing to offer in the second half. So, I think we sort of managed the game quite well, to be honest. And it was getting a little bit frustrating at times because in the second half, it felt like, especially after we went ahead, after I guess you could say quite sort of fortuitous mistake from their goalkeeper, from what was a pretty tame shot from Adam May, we had probably four or five decent openings and sort of quite presentable situations, which we didn't take advantage of. So, you know, with every time like Harvey Nibbs hit the side netting from a decent spot and every time that their centre-back puts one onto the bar rather than in the back of the net, you start to think, is it just going to be one of those days where we have chance after chance after chance and just don't capitalise and they got the other end and nick one and obviously managed to stay resolute and, you know, kind of battled against it really well as we've, you know, kind of come to expect from this team now. So, yeah, managed it well and it was good to, you know, get the goal right at the end. And, yeah, as you said before, it was just a perfect minute, I think, for any Cambridge United fantasy. Where's Houlihan score? Posh conceded a goal at Derby, which was quite entertaining. And yeah, I think barring any sort of real major collapse from here on in, probably just about confirmed safety, I think.
Yeah, it's probably a foot in League One for next season, isn't it? I mean, it's a big statement to make with 14 games left, but it's hard not to see it that way. We'll come on to a bit more sort of relegation chat later on in the pod. Let's do a bit more Wes Houlihan then. I mean, Sam Green tweeted us on full time saying, what a finish, Wes. Abistan pod must be trying to contain themselves. Sam, I think judging by you're about, what, 7.5 minutes into this pod, and we've mentioned him, what, like 12 times already. But, I mean, quite simply, Tom, I'm going to come back to you because I saw your tweet at the end of the game, so I'm going to give you this one. How good is Wes Houlihan?
Yeah, he's the best we've ever had, I think. I know there'll be people of a more classic vintage than myself, shall we say, who will probably be up in arms and they'll look towards Dion Dublin, who was obviously brilliant for I guess other reasons than Wes Houlihan's brilliant. But I mean, in terms of pure sort of technical footballing ability, I, unless I'm missing anyone, you know, kind of obvious, I think definitely the best that's ever worn the shirt, I think. And certainly in sort of my time of going and sort of my time of watching Cambridge, it's probably not even close anymore, to be honest. It wasn't just the goal. I think there were a lot of moments in the game where he's just doing things with the football that shouldn't really happen at this level and shouldn't really happen, you know, for a player in a team that we're expected to finish bottom of the league at this level. So yeah, really, really good. I'm glad he got his goal.
You like him.
Yeah. I approve. I think we can put that debate to bed.
Good signing. Yeah.
I like the guy, and I've just enjoy this season. I think basically is my message.
Yeah, I'll ask that in a second. But George, to give you a chance to sort of wax lyrical about the man, let me phrase it in a different way. I stood next to you at Gillingham away a couple of weeks ago, where we spent 90 minutes, where we had the ball for a lot of it, but struggled to create any chances. Against Burton and Accrington, since then, we've created loads of chances. We probably should have scored 3 or 4 in both games. You can name so many chances in both games. Is the difference just Wes Hoolihan? Is it as simple as that?
Ooh, I think there might be a few other factors that might have been influenced.
No, this doesn't suit my Wes agenda.
for balance, I think there might have been a few other factors. Like, I think first half yesterday, we struggled to get Digby and May on the ball, and it was the same away to Gillingham. So perhaps there is that as well. But I think the biggest factor, yeah, must be Wes. To go back to Sam's question about us trying to contain ourselves, I mean, it's a case of trying and failing there, Sam. He was just brilliant, Wes. He was involved in everything yesterday. And yeah, coming back to what you were saying there, Julian, it's about that quality in the final third that we were missing against Gillingham. We seemed to sort of have a lot of the ball around the box, but there was no sort of quality sort of leading sort of us into the box. And yeah, that was a big thing that we were missing at Gillingham. So yeah, great to have him back against Burton and yesterday against Accrington. I think what we're also seeing with Wes is his relationship blossoming with other players. Obviously last year, it was about how he got on with Noyle and Mullin and Ironside. What we're now seeing is his relationship with Nibs and Williams really blossoming. Probably his biggest relationship is the one with Brophy. I'm sure we'll come on to Brophy in a bit, but yeah, he's just been terrific. And the one thing that if I was to criticize him so far this season, it's been that he's not really tried to take any shots or test the keeper. Yesterday, he tried it a couple of times. One went embarrassingly wide. So I was a little bit worried that might be the end of his shooting for the day. But terrific nonchalant finish for the second goal there. It was just sensational to see him bust a lung to go that distance in the 95th minute. You know, the way he strokes the ball in, like the keeper doesn't move because he knows that he's not getting anywhere near that. It was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And I feel like I've not been on a pod this season where I've got to praise Wesley. I remember listening to others do it so far this season. So I'm enjoying my moment in the sun, roly-polying all around the house as I think about him.
Well, look, let me ask you this other question. I mean, the guy turns 40 in May. He's not going to be here forever. I've had a question from Stuart, and thanks everyone for all your questions. We got loads this week. Do keep sending them in at AbbeyStanPod on Twitter. Stuart asked, will Hoolihan play another season for us? George, what's your gut feel on that?
I think he can play another season for us. He doesn't seem to be showing signs of slowing down. As we saw yesterday, he's still influencing games. He still looks physically fit. I think the offer will be there from the club. I guess it all comes down to how well we can convince him to stay. I think it will be a case of, does he get better offers? There's lots of whispers about him wanting to finish his career playing in Ireland. So maybe that might be more of a factor than what we can offer. But I would love to see him here next year, because not just for the attachment of this year and last year, but purely because he has got the quality to do it at League One for another season. I don't doubt that for a second.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely nothing in doubt. And his fitness isn't in doubt either. As you say, it's a 95th minute sprint into the box for that second goal. While we're on the, if you want a little bit more positivity as well, looking at the rest of the season, is that we've only scheduled 2 more Tuesdays for the rest of the season. So then we've got Wes every week. So there should be more points for the use there. Let's go on to that second goal, but a very important aspect of it that definitely don't want to disregard, which was James Brophy in the build-up to it. I mean, he had a sensational game in general yesterday, I thought, and he's been getting better and better every week. Adam's asked, how good was Brophy today? And Tom, I'm going to just add on to that as a question. Has that finally put the debate on James Brophy to bed?
Yeah, it's one that we've kind of had amongst ourselves, and I guess on the pod, actually, for a few weeks. So people who have you know, listen to that, we'll probably know that from my perspective, it's been kind of case closed for quite a long time now. And if there's still people who are, you know, wondering what value James Brophy brings to this football team, I probably wouldn't listen to them on too many other matters. So, yeah, he played really well against Accrington. It's just, I think it's another performance in kind of a string of performances that he's put in, which have been quite impressive. I think specifically what's kind of been quite good to see is that his ability to like beat a man is so good. And I know that people may, you know, I guess maybe the one question people might have is about the end product and what does he do once he's beaten his man. But the fact of the matter is, if you're getting around your fullback six, seven times in a game, if you know your end product doesn't have to be that good to, you know, sort of get in a position where you're either scoring a goal, getting a shot away, or you know maybe setting someone else up. So yeah, case closed on that one, I think, and hopefully continues going, you know, in this sort of trend for, you know, a few more weeks to come yet. Obviously, we've gotten tied down to quite a long contract, so when maybe there were question marks about his performances earlier on in the season, might have been a bit of a concern, but I think you look at it now and, you know, you would hope that he's someone who's going to contribute for this club at this level for, you know, the foreseeable.
Is anyone else in the same boat where you're really annoyed of hearing the term, oh, that's Brophy's best game for us so far? I must have heard it about six, seven times over the last couple of months.
Maybe it's true, though. He is getting better and better, isn't it? Like, you make an argument that
he's due a stinker now, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, Jordan, I've got a question for you, actually. Something that I've seen sort of around on Twitter, and I've heard a few people mention it, is where do you stand on this shout to play him on the right-hand side? It's like an inverted winger. He's very, very one-footed. If you look at that second goal yesterday, there's something to be said for it, right? He's sort of, I know he picks it up on the left-hand side, but he creates it from closer to the right wing. And I don't know, if you look at him cutting inside on his left, which, you know, he likes cutting inside on his weak foot when he plays on the left-hand side, do you think there's any value in that debate?
Did he do that the very start of the season in this reverse fixture at Accrington away? Am I imagining that? I feel like it has been tried this season and it didn't go too well. In general, I'm not massively against it as an idea, but he just looks so great out on the left that I wouldn't want to sort of mess with that formula. So I wouldn't be burning at the seams to swap him over onto the right. I'd be interested to see him play maybe through the middle. Obviously Tuesday night we've got a game, which means no Wes. Got a few options there with May and Lancaster and others, but I wonder if he could maybe do a central role. But no, I wouldn't be jumping at the opportunity to switch him to the right-hand side just yet, primarily because it's like, well, who are you going to play out on the left? Like, if you've got Houlihan available, you play him through the middle. But he was immense yesterday. A really, really great performance. Great to see him use his right foot as well. Should have been an assist. Nibs fluffed his lines, but I think assist of the season so far for Wes's goal. And like Tom said, his qualities and what he brings to the side have been evident for quite a while now. You know, he gets us up the pitch, he's got pace, he can hold on to the ball. What we're now starting to see is goal involvements as well, which is obviously fantastic to see as a fan, but as someone who on the preseason podcast predicted that Brophy would be involved in most of our goals this season, it's great for me to finally see that prediction's starting to show some fruit. And I won't be too embarrassed when we do an end of season review.
Yeah, it's one of them things, isn't it? The sort of numbers behind, like the sort of cold hard stats. It's like when we saw his performances improve, but he wasn't quite backing them up with the numbers. But now, yeah, he's starting to do that, and it was sensational yesterday. As were a lot of our players. Let's go for a few others. Starting from the back, obviously, Mitov, good game, a few good saves by his standard. I don't think it's anything exceptional that we need to talk about. Someone I do want to talk about, though, who's been really good in pods in recent games, maybe on the pods too, is Sam Schering. Mark's asked, should we try and get Schering here longer term? He made the League One Team of the Week this year. Tom, what's your views on how Schering's been getting on?
Yeah, he's been doing really well. He's slotted into that that back line very, very well, I think. Obviously, I think since he's come in, he's sort of been involved in, I don't know the stats, it must be like three or four clean sheets now. So he's obviously sort of playing his part, and it's showing in terms of the actual results that we're getting. I think about getting him longer term. We were actually talking about this on the way back from the on the way back from the game on Saturday, about how are we going to sort of approach recruitment and sort of how we've done it over the last few years. And I guess if you're talking about what our plans might be or might not be for Sam Sherry, I guess you could look at who he's playing next to, Okadina. Very, very similar situations, coming on loan, impressed, I think, you know, so far. And, you know, you maybe wonder, is it worth asking the question about whether or not he wants to come and join us permanently? Clearly, young players from clubs in the top end of the Championship, like Bournemouth, who probably have aspirations of being, again, a Premier League club in the near future. It's about whether you can convince them it's the right choice to sort of drop down to go back up again, if that makes sense, rather than just kind of staying where you are and hoping to make it in the first team at your parent club. I think we're in a really good spot to be able to do that. Not specifically with Sam Sherry, and it obviously veers off into a slightly different conversation about what we plan to do in the summer, but specifically with Sherry, like he does it like an asset that's worth investing in if there's the opportunity to do it and if he's willing to do it. Fits the mold perfectly. I mean, the sort of chats we were having throughout January about centre-backs were, we need to get someone experienced in. Well, we've kind of got that wrong a little bit, I think, because he's coming in and he looks every bit the sort of right footballer that we, you know, that we're kind of looking for in that position. So, yeah, I think one that I would have absolutely no issues with seeing us try and either get him next season or, you know, if we can, maybe try and get him on, you know, maybe even a permanent deal. But the other thing that we have to, you know, remember is that coming back into the squad, we're going to have two very, very good centre-backs as well. Lloyd Jones, obviously Greg Taylor, has been out for a long time, who I expect would probably maybe get another crack of the whip next season. So, yeah, it's a tough one, but he's certainly playing well. And if the opportunity's there, I would not be against it.
Yeah, with those injuries coming back, there could be some serious depth there at centre half. But obviously, it's a big if, as we've seen this season. Someone else who's been a sort of constant underrated performer in this squad last year as well as this season is Paul Digby, who had another brilliant game yesterday. And I know everyone rates him, but it's just someone that he does a lot of that unglamorous work that you don't often get the opportunity to sort of talk about him. So, George, how impressive has he been for you recently?
Yeah, hugely impressive. You talk about players coming back. Obviously, Greg is not just a centre-back, but he's also club captain. I think there's an argument to say that you don't take the armband off Digger. He's that influential, both as a player and as a leader. Yeah, he's been playing great. I feel like he's had to play a slightly different role the last few weeks and perhaps try and be a little bit more box-to-box as well as being the sort of central midfielder destroyer. He's been terrific, and Bonner quite rightly was full of praise for him in his pre-match presser ahead of Accrington. He actually mentioned that Digby has started doing his badges, so he's looking to get into coaching as well, so perhaps there's something that the club can help him with there. His involvements further up the pitch as well have been impressive. We don't score the first goal away to Burton last week without him. It's making a really positive influence on the team. He's going to be very busy on Tuesday night because Kamara and Mayer for Plymouth are two really great midfielders, central midfielders in this league, pull the strings for Plymouth. So he's going to have a busy one on Tuesday night against those two.
Well, we've got full Plymouth preview coming up in the next few minutes. But just before we do that, just sort of a few other players that have impressed recently. This is a good point that friend of the pod, Tim Berry's sent in. A lot of players have been standing up when needed due to injuries, and he's been really impressed with Harvey Nibbs. The Nibbler. Yeah, the Nibbler's had a couple of really, really impressive games. He's really stepped up in what is quite a natural position for him. Tom, where do you stand on how Harvey Nibbs has been performing recently?
Yeah, he's done really well, and we were probably, I'd maybe say a little bit harsh on him earlier on in the season, and some of the maybe comments that we made and maybe how we sort of rated him as an option at this level. I think for a player like Harvey Nibbs at the age he's at, and you've got to remember that he's still very, very inexperienced as a footballer. He didn't play a huge amount of games last season. Obviously, the season before, I think, was his first as a pro, and it obviously got cut halfway through, and he even spent some time out there injured. So, in terms of the time that he spent as a professional footballer, sort of playing week in, week out, It's very, very limited. So I think the first thing is that he's really benefited from just having a run of games, which is not an easy thing to get when you've got someone like Giants side ahead of you and, you know, you're playing a level up from, you know, what you've been doing previously. But yeah, it looks like firstly he's learned the role very well on that right-hand side. I felt maybe at times against Accrington, particularly in the first half, he kind of had a bit of a tendency to sort of drift inwards a little bit. And then when the ball sort of got recycled and George Williams had it or something like that, there wasn't really an option ahead of him. So maybe in that respect, that's maybe something to work on, just to sort of show for the fullback a bit more. But I guess that's natural for someone who, you know, is used to playing down the middle and probably preferably would be playing down the middle. And that's probably where a lot of his best qualities are. But yeah, he's coming on so well. He's got so many sort of raw attributes that I think should lend to him becoming quite a good footballer at this level. His pace is very good. He's actually pretty strong as well. Like there's a lot of occasions where he can kind of get around or sort of bustle through maybe a fullback and a centre back. And we've talked about it quite a lot, but he does just have a knack of getting into good positions, particularly in the box. The goal at Burton's an obvious example, and obviously a really good finish from a tight angle. And against Accrington, there was obviously that chance where he couldn't quite make the right touch on the ball and couldn't quite sort of turn and kind of get it into what was basically an empty net. So yeah, there's a lot of things to like about what he's doing. I still think there's work to be done, as obviously there is with you know, I guess any young player making their way in the game. But yeah, it's good to see. And it's important to have players like that who can come in and contribute, because, you know, what football team has their 11 best players and their best 11 fit throughout the season? So yeah, to have him as an option to sort of play in that role or playing down the middle when needed is really encouraging. And I think he's starting to make it quite difficult maybe for others to come back into the team when they are fit.
Yeah, he could definitely make us look very silly if he went back to a few podcasts this season and heard a few of the things that we've probably said about him, which probably hasn't stood the test of time at the moment. Speaking about these sort of attacking options, we've mentioned Nibs, we've mentioned Brophy. A question from Thomas is, if Ironside were 100% fit tomorrow, would Smith get into the 11 with Nibs and Brophy playing as well as they are? George, there's one for you. What with all these options available, do you still start Smith on the right, or would you prefer Nibs on the right?
It's a terrific question, Thomas. I would say if it were purely for attacking returns, I'd pick Smith, but it's not, is it? It's more than that. And I think Nibs perhaps edges it because he's got the fitness. He tracks back better. His defensive part has come on really well. And even if he's not 100% sure that he knows what he's doing in defence or midfield, he's got the pace and he's got the athleticism to just be there and be a presence. So he is incredibly useful. I think Nibs has been excellent the last couple of weeks, especially yesterday running with the ball. I think he carried it really well. But he is still a bit of an enigma for me. I think Tom was very polite saying that he's still got elements of his game to work on. Hopefully Barry Corr can work on those with him, because I think his finishing needs some work. Tom mentioned the chance, which was quite a difficult one, really close to sort of the goal itself and a few people on the line and getting the right angle. But there was a chance after that, right at the end, where Brophy, of course, put a fantastic ball through and Nibs goes through one-on-one and he hits the side netting. And you just think, if you're not scoring, you've got to be testing the keeper here. So to not even hit the target is a bit of a shocker. But you know, like Tom was saying, he's 22, he's not had a lot of match time. So perhaps with that, these kind of sort of areas will improve. But when you're a team that's just above that sort of relegation kind of sort of picture, you are a team that has to take your chances to make sure you get the points and stay clear of it. And I genuinely thought there were points yesterday afternoon where we would regret those missed opportunities. Nibbler had a couple, should have had a penalty. I'm going to contradict what Julian said earlier in the pod, and I think Dimmy kept us in the game with a couple of very good saves. And I could have seen that second half go either way, and it would have been a real shame, because I thought we were brilliant second half. We were the best team on the pitch second half, and we created a lot of good opportunities. So, yeah, the long answer is yes, I would keep Nibs on the right hand side ahead of Smith, but I do think there's elements for him to improve on. But he's the kind of player that could win us penalties, Julian.
Honestly, I was right in front of it. I'm just not convinced it's a pen at all. I think that the guy leaves his leg out, sure, and there's a bit of contact, but he there is absolutely not enough to make him go down the way he went down.
That's a pen, mate.
I've watched it back and I'm even more convinced, but look, I'm clearly in the minority.
Look, you just can't see things right in the NRE, mate. You need to be...
Mate, I was right in front of it. How can you see it? You're in the Habin.
I was level with it, mate. I was in the North Habin yesterday because someone decided to give my lovely South Habin to the 150 away fans. I had a great view of it. Straight on, could see the contact, penalty all day long.
Well, look, for me, he has a better chance of scoring if he just stays on his feet and has a shot because he's beaten his man. So he may as well just have a shot at that point. He's one-on-one. Anyway, this is we're really, really getting into fine details here. Tom, your Siren hot take in the car home is worth discussing. That's a wry smile.
This is ludicrous, by the way.
No, it's worth... Do you know what? To be fair to Tom, yeah, he asked it as a question. He didn't say it was his opinion. But he asked, do you think Ironside might struggle to make the 11 when he's back from injury? Do you stand by it, Tom? Choose your words carefully.
How do I answer this one?
Your Honour.
I think I'm going to need some sort of legal representation for this. I would say I made a comment while high on the delight of watching us beat Accrington and watching Posh fall to probable championship relegation that maybe won't stand the test of time. But I think it came from a good place. That's what I would say, in that there are players in this team who would not have got a chance to play if everyone was fit and available, who are making the most of that opportunity. And therefore, it might seem harsh to an extent to drop them the second that other players come back fit and available. I would say that probably applies more so to someone like Tracy, who probably wouldn't come straight back into the team when he's fit, because you've had Nibs playing on the right, you've had Smith playing before him on the right, who I think have done a pretty good job overall. Contributed goals, contributed assists, made defenders work hard. I think after maybe a few weeks have learnt the defensive side of the game quite well as well. Clearly Ironside is a different case in that he is quite central to pretty much everything we do. So perhaps me making the suggestion that he might not get back into the team straight away was getting a touch carried away.
Sounds like backtracking.
It is. But I'm here to raise discussions. I'm here to pose problems, not solutions. So,
Problem to have. Let's put it that way, right? We've got multiple people scoring goals as well, right? Smith's on a really decent number already this season in all competitions. So I see where you were coming from with the question, but I think it's ludicrous.
Yeah, it's absolutely ludicrous. Although I think it's important to point out that yesterday was obviously important for lots of reasons. We touched on it at the start, difficult games and points returns, but it's also, I guess, important to get a win without Ironside playing, get that monkey off our back. It looked a long way off, at Fleetwood away and at Gillingham away especially, but we've, over the last couple of weeks, have now shown that we can score goals without him in the side, and we've also shown that we can win games without him in the side. So I guess that's important as well.
Yeah, it's something we discussed last week. It's like all these points we're picking up while this injury list is so huge with so many key players in it are worth their weight in gold, because you'd want those players back for those huge games. And there is a huge game coming up on Tuesday against probably one of the best sides in the division, really, in Plymouth Argyle. Jord had a great chat with Chris from Plymouth Live.
Right then, news fans, I'm joined by Chris, who is a writer for Plymouth Live, covers Argyle for them. Chris, thank you very much for joining us. Four wins on the trot now for Plymouth. Seems like you guys are in a really good place.
Yeah, good to have a chance to talk about Argyle and Cambridge River, Jordan. Yes, they are. As you say, four successive wins for them in the league. Unbeaten in five, and it could easily have been five wins in a row, Jordan, because we were up at Fleetwood on a Tuesday night 2 or 3 weeks ago, and Argyle had a 3-1 lead going into the 89th minute and somehow managed to contrive conceding two late goals, and it ended up 3-3. And I remember everyone leaving Highbury Stadium that night thinking, oh, we've thrown away 2 points here, and what could be the consequences of that? And instead, Argyle have bounced back fantastically well. As you say, four successive league wins. Three of those have been away from home. And they've also managed to throw in an FA Cup tie against Chelsea, where they went to Stamford Bridge and took the European champions all the way to extra time and only just lost 2-1. So they're in a good run of form. And confidence will be really high in the dressing room.
What do you reckon the reason for the recent success has been, Chris, or the success this season, actually, because you've been in the top 10 pretty much the whole season, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think they got off to a good start. That's one of the reasons, Jordan. They lost at Rotherham on the first day of the season. And as sort of history's transpired, you know, losing to Rotherham away from home is no shame, is it? Because, you know, they're clearly the best team in the division. Mm. They then went on a 16-game unbeaten league run. And I think that's just given them the belief, the confidence, the authority to go out and assert themselves in games. And they had a little bit of a blip around December time. Manager Ryan Lowe was poached by Preston North End. He went to them. Mm. They promoted his assistant, Stephen Schumacher, to become manager. And I think that has proved to be a very good decision because it's given them stability. Stephen Schumacher knows the players know him. The system hasn't changed, the players hasn't changed, and they've managed just to keep things rolling along. And like I said, they had a little bit of a dip around sort of Christmas time, but they've come back strongly. Goal scoring has been good for them. They've got four strikers who are all chipping in, and defensively they've been pretty solid. I mean, all the things that any successful team has, if you can keep a fair amount of clean sheets and your strikers are chipping in with goals regularly, you're not going to be going too far wrong, are you?
Exactly. Looking ahead to Tuesday night then, Chris, because it's been such a long time since we played you guys, I think second game of the season, so most of you fans have probably forgotten what formation Plymouth line up with and what your key men are, but could you give us a little refresher of how you're likely to line up and names that we should keep an eye on as being potential game changers?
Yeah, it does seem a while ago now, doesn't it? But, you know, we're into the final third of the season now, and it's getting to the nitty-gritty, isn't it? I mean, you can bank your bottom dollar that Argyle will play a 3-5-2 or 3-1-4-2. As I said to you before, Jordan, you know, Stephen Schumacher and Ryan Lowe have the same football principles, and Argyle really haven't changed the way they play. You know, maybe a couple of slight tweaks, but generally you can guarantee they'll play a 3-5-2. Jordan Houghton, who's was at Chelsea a youngster, and then he's had quite a few loan spells at various clubs, will play the midfield holding role. They've got the three centre-backs who will be, you know, have been solid, kept clean sheets in the last two games at home to Shrewsbury and away to Gillingham. Michael Cooper, the goalkeeper, only 22-year-old, but he started every game for Argyle since the start of last league season, the last season, very highly rated prospect. So you've got him and the three defenders, Jordan Houghton in the midfield role. The two wing-backs are key in the Argyle team. One of them is the skipper, Joe Edwards. Other is Connor Grant, who's got a lovely left foot, good with crosses and set pieces. The two centre midfield players are the key, really, I would say, to Argyle. Panucci Kamara, who's recently been capped by Guinea-Bissau. He played for them in the Africa Cup of Nations last month, made two starts and one sub appearance. Very rangy, tall, powerful centre midfielder. And then you've got Danny Meyer, who's been around League One, League Two. I'm sure some Cambridge fans will have seen him over the years. Very talented midfield player on the ball. And as I touched on briefly before, they've got pretty much four strikers who are just being constantly rotated at the moment. You really would say that they're all scoring goals, they're all contributing. And it's a case of Stephen Schumacher looking at the opposition, looking at their strengths and weaknesses and picking the two that he thinks will be the best for the four. So it would be pretty close to that sort of starting lineup. The strikers, you know, could be anybody. That when they won at Gillingham on Saturday, they had Niall Ennis and Jordan Garrick up front with Ryan Hardy and Luke Jeffcott as the two subs in the second half. Wouldn't be totally surprised at all if Hardy and Jeffcott start against Cambridge and Garrick and Ennis come on in the second half of Cambridge. That's the way it seems to be sort of working. But they've got good options. They're confident. But, you know, it looks like Cambridge had a pretty good result against Accrington on Saturday, stopped a bit of a run that they were on. And every time I've been to the Abbey Stadium and watched Argyle, I can't remember there being an easy game for Argyle, even though they might have won one or two. And I've still got horrible memories of, I think it was in 1997, Jordan, when Argyle went up there in an FA Cup tie. It went to extra time, which on a Tuesday night, when you've got to go back to Plymouth afterwards, wasn't great. And Cambridge ended up winning 3-2. Some of your viewers and listeners may remember that one. But yeah, I can remember driving back to from Cambridge on that Tuesday night. And I think I got back to Plymouth about 5 o'clock in the morning. It was, it wasn't great.
Yeah, I think Cambridge fans will have fond memories of Plymouth because we played you our very first game back in the Football League after being out for nearly a decade.
That's right.
You did us the favour of letting us win and didn't ruin the party. So fond memories of Plymouth.
It was very nice. I do remember the press box. They did these lovely, nice sort of cupcake things. And I can't remember the lady who did them, but they had like the club badge on as well. It was a really nice touch. You couldn't go to Cambridge on the first day back in the Football League and beat them. That would have been rude.
One last question, Chris. How do you see Tuesday panning out? What's your score prediction?
Well, it's going to be an interesting game, isn't it? Because I think Cambridge are pretty decent at home. Scoring goals, it looks as though isn't too much of an issue. Got some good attacking players. Argyle are going to go there full of confidence. They've won, like I say, four in a row. Three of those have been away from home. Went to Doncaster and won 3-1. They went to Crewe and won 4-1. Went to Gingham at the weekend and won 2-0. So, you know, they're on a great form in away games. So this is going to put the sort of commentator's curse on it, isn't it? But you would imagine this is going to be a pretty tight, an open game, but it's going to be close. Could be one goal out of four or five or, you know, whatever that makes the difference. I'm obviously hoping Argyle will get the win. It would keep them right up in the thick of the promotion playoff race. So I'll go for 2-1 Argyle, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was a pretty tight, close game and maybe a few goals in it as well.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much for that, Chris. I hope you're wrong, but thanks for your insight.
Thanks very much for that, Chris. Let's go for a nice simple question for you both. Would you say that after Saturday's win, this is a bit of a free hit, Jord?
Absolutely not, mate. Absolutely not. I think we've been really competitive at home this season. Admittedly, we won't be at full strength on Tuesday night. No Ironside, no Iredale, no Wes. But I think we've got to take not only heart, but also precedent from how we've played at home against the better teams in the league. Narrow defeats to Rotherham and Sunderland, holding Wigan and Sheffield Wednesday and Ipswich to draws, Oxford as well to a draw. So it's not a free hit because we're not entirely safe yet. And also we're at home. It's going to be a second long journey in a few days for Plymouth as well. So we've got to maybe try and play on that. Perhaps conditions might be there as well. I can see why you would say it's a free hit because obviously a great win and, you know, 11 points clear now of Morecambe and a good goal difference. But for me, it's not. It's nowhere near a free hit because I think we've got to target the fact that our home form is pretty good and it's a tough place to come and get results. And I mentioned in the first part, we play all the teams currently second to ninth. Most of those games are away from home. So the ones that are at home, we've got to try, you know, and not write them off and consider them free hits. So no, I would expect us to be as competitive as possible on Tuesday.
I suppose what Saturday does is maybe take a bit of the pressure off. It means that you don't have to get points out of it, but I'm with you on this. Like, I think we're a decent enough side to go and actually, you know, try and target points. We can play the game on our terms, right? We don't have to just sit back and play on their terms. They're four wins on the trot at the moment. They're playing a little spell of sort of, let's say, relegation contenders, which will throw us into that mix. But they played Gillingham on Saturday, Shrewsbury before that, and I think it was Crewe and Fleetwood the weeks before that. Can't quite remember the order, but they're, I mean, clearly a very, very good side. They put 15 game unbeaten run together earlier in the season, as Chris mentioned there. Tom, what are your thoughts on this Plymouth side? I mean, we've played them a lot in the past couple of years, but this one have got a really decent chance at making it back to the Championship. Do you fear them?
Not really.
Great.
Yeah, sounds.
Let's just wrap it up.
I wonder if your mate from the away leg's going to be there.
Yeah, sounding incredibly bullish on that one. Yeah, actually, that was one of my highlights of the season, actually. In the reverse fixture at Home Park when Plymouth scored a goal which was disallowed, and in the meantime a Plymouth fan had, shall we say, quite exuberantly celebrated by making quite a long run from basically the corner flag to the away end, only to see the offside flag raised to then be manhandled out of the ground by about 8 stewards. That was quite entertaining. So maybe he will make the journey, but maybe he'll just check over his shoulder before going too mental this time around. No, in all seriousness, they're a good team. That sounded very Frank Lampard, didn't it? Sorry about that. Danny Mayer is a player who we've come up against, I think, when he was at Bury, and obviously when he's been playing for Plymouth as well. Just a very, very good footballer. I would guess he's probably Plymouth's answer to Wes Houlihan. Not as good, but, you know.
Plays more often.
It's worth a go.
Not scored at the Euros, I hear.
Probably not. Yeah. No. I hear Pantucci Kamara gave it a go at the African Cup of Nations, but didn't quite play twice.
Didn't score though, did he?
It's no Kwezi.
I think probably the one area that maybe is of concern is that they're going to be quite difficult to prepare for, and that it's quite hard to predict what their lineup's going to be. I think specifically with the strikers, they started the game at Gillingham with Garrick and Niall Ennis playing up front. And then on the bench, they've got who I would have guessed were their first choice strikers in Ryan Hardy and Luke Jeffcott. Jeffcott is a player who just seems to score every time he plays. So it's quite strange that he's not starting games there, but I guess it keeps opposition on their toes in sort of lead up to games. But I think the first thing to note is that Plymouth are on a good run of form, of course. And, you know, granted, I'll allow them that. But I mean, like, with the greatest respect, like, they've beaten Gillingham, who I know beat us, but like they are where they are for a reason.
We haven't scored against this season.
I'll leave that one out. They've beaten Shrewsbury, who are down there and really struggling at the moment. They're beating Crewe, who are probably already preparing for a mid-table season in League Two next year. Donny, we know it's about. And then they were sort of, they obviously dropped silly points away at Fleetwood, which I think we've probably done as well. But I'm going to leave out the bit where they took the current European champions all the way to extra time. But I think they're a team who are very good at beating poor opposition. And I'm not saying that they're flat track bullies, because they are where they are in the league for a reason. But I do think they can be got at, and I don't think there's any reason that we should go into this game fearing Plymouth as much as we might, say, a Rotherham or a Wigan. And they're teams that we have gone toe-to-toe with in the recent past. So I think there's an opportunity to get something from the game. And I think if we can do that, if we can get a point, or even better, if we can win the game, I think any sort of lingering concerns about our immediate future in this division might be put to bed.
I think for this week, given the win, I'm going to leave proper relegation chat, because we don't need it this week. We can ride this wave of positivity. What I do want to talk about, though, is a really interesting question that David's sent in. That's two games in a row that Bonner hasn't made a sub. And against Gillingham, he made a sub maybe uncharacteristically early. Like, you wouldn't say it's early for you know, any other manager, but on the 60th minute, he took O'Neill off, probably for a fitness thing. What do you think is going on there, Jord? Do you think there's something in that? Do you think he's, like David asked, do you think Mark may have lost a bit of confidence after Gillingham? Do you think there's anything in that?
I mean, I'm going to answer David's question with a question of my own, and that is, did you not see Liam O'Neill come on yesterday? His game-changing cameo of 2 seconds before the final whistle was a real, you know, real, it secured the Fair. 3 points. It
Fair
secured
point.
The 3 points in my
Fair
eyes.
Fair point.
I think David is spot on. After that Gillingham game, Bonner did seem quite downbeat about the fact that making a change like the 60, 65 minute mark really disrupted the flow of the game, and it ultimately saw us surrender control of midfield, and in his eyes was the reason that we went on to lose the game. I don't fully agree with that. I think us switching off from defending a set piece again cost us the game. I think our entries into the box in the final third also cost us the game. So I'm not fully on side that it was completely down to the substitution, but I think David's right. I think Bonner is perhaps a little bit weary of it, a little bit frightened of it. I think we're going to have to face that same scenario on Tuesday night against Plymouth, because obviously Wes won't play. So the question is, like, how do we line up? Given what we've just been saying about Plymouth's, you know, midfield of Camara and Mayer and how good they are, for me, it seems only logical that O'Neill comes in to partner Digby. Maybe even play May in a midfield three and not have him further forward like we normally do when we swap on Tuesday nights, just to try and be more competitive in the middle there, because that's such a good midfield that they're coming up against. And if we go with that, can O'Neill do the full 90? I'm not sure. I think we'll probably will need to swap it around. So yeah, I think Bonner is a little bit maybe feels like he's had his hands burnt by making the substitution, but I think we're going to have to sort of get over it on Tuesday night because of the scenario.
Yeah, it's one to watch out for, isn't it? It's going to be very interesting to see what he gets up to there. Let's sort of wrap things up with a bit of chat on that lot up the road who look very much like they're going to be relegated back to League One next season. Tom's eager for this question. We've got a question from @CU2392. It said, thoughts on Cambridge Borough starting to look like it will really happen now? Tom?
Yeah, I've waited patiently. Let me enjoy this. Indulge me this moment. Yeah, where to start? Let's start at the beginning, I guess. First, it's quite funny. Throughout the afternoon, we saw their, I guess, their immediate relegation rivals, Reading, the ones who occupy the spot just above the relegation zone, winning quite comfortably, and the posh game was finally poised at 0-0, and just a brilliant moment when, like, the news sort of goes round a stand, and everyone sort of gets wind of what's just happened when they concede a late goal. So that was good, and they obviously lost the game, and I think they are probably the worst team in the Championship. I think
there's also a brilliant moment in that Derby game, sorry to interrupt, Tom, where they came up on the announcement on the tannoy just after Borough had conceded, saying that every train from Derby to Peterborough had been cancelled for the rest of the evening. Kick them out while they're down.
Brilliant. It is quite glorious, but it just got better. Like, we're sat in the car on the way out and listening to BBC Radio Cambridge. Like, I mean, let's say, right, for the last sort of two decades, they have been a different football club to us in terms of what their expectations are, what their ambitions are, how they do on the pitch. And that's been reflected in the coverage that we've had locally. To be honest, it's kind of part of the reason that we started this whole thing up in the first place, is because we didn't feel that there was enough out there, sort of independent analysis of Cambridge United. And that's why we wanted to maybe fill a gap, so to speak. So, you know, I guess we've got them to thank for this. But it was brilliant on the radio, because, like, they still dedicate quite a lot more time, I feel, to Posh than they do to us. And normally that's quite annoying. And normally that's something that is just like, come on, move on. But yesterday I was actually quite concerned they were going to move on and not talk about them. But what we got was, listening to it, it was just so good to hear falling apart, no direction, terrible recruitment, all these things that have been specifically attributed to us for nearly two decades, or more than two decades, going completely the other way. They're going to come down and we're going to play them next season. And if you put a gun to my head and said, what would the score be when we play them? I would back us every single day of the week at the moment. Clearly, I'm saying that off the back of a win where we've all but confirmed, I think, League One survival. But yeah, it's glorious. So not only do we get to enjoy this fantastic team of footballers, this management, this ownership of the football club, but we also get the dessert of Posh getting battered every week.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty special occasion. I mean, George, you're the sort of the elder statesman of the pod. You'll remember the last time we played them, the last Cambridgeshire derby 21 years ago. Did you think at that point that it would be that long until we were in the same division again?
Really great question. I think at that exact point, probably no, but not long afterwards, I do feel like it was quite obvious that our trajectories were going different ways. And it did feel for a long time that season on season, we were getting further apart. And really, that feeling has only changed the last couple of years, you know, with everything that's positive that's going on around the club at the moment. Like, the thought of getting into League One was not on the cards for a long time. So yeah, I at the time, no, I don't think it was on my mind, but it certainly was a few years sort of afterwards. You know, we dropped out of the league 2005, I think, the 2004-05 season. McAntony, I think, started his investment in Borough the following season. So that gap soon sort of expanded and you know, seeing them go up to the Championship before, seeing them spend lots of money, seeing them do well on selling players and recouping money as well. It did feel for quite a long time that the gap was just getting bigger and bigger. I love what I've seen on Twitter over the weekend, everyone reminding the Borough social media team of their tweet when we got promoted. Looking forward to them. Yeah, I don't want to count my chickens until they're here. So I'm not going to say, oh, we're definitely going to play them next year. There's a little part of me that would be worried playing them next year because they are a good League One team. You know, when they're down in this division, they do tend to be in the top part of it. So it won't be easy. But without sounding condescending, like it's just exciting to think that there is a group of a really large group of fans who have become Cambridge fans over the last 20 years that haven't seen us in a proper derby. You know, I'm not counting the Pizza Trophy. There must be like waves of fans that have never been to London Road. Hope it happens because the occasion will be something else. So yeah, bring it on. And God, I just remember being there, not the last time we played them, but the time before we lost 4-1 and it was under Beck and it was a terrible side. And I just had a feeling that I would love to sort of revenge this afternoon. And yeah, I hope I get that opportunity next year. And I hope Wesley Houlihan is part of it as well.
I was just about to say, with Wes in the side.
Yeah.
Jordan, I think you've been very diplomatic there in what you said, which is good balanced analysis that I'm not a massive fan of on this podcast.
Well, we heard what you said about Ironside, mate. So yeah.
Yeah. I think it's more than okay to get carried away and let's start counting those chickens already. They are a terrible team at the level that they're playing at. Their fans seem to be turning at every corner on the manager, the ownership, and perhaps some of the players as well. And it's quite good to see, to be honest. Maybe I'm biased by the years of supporting their major rivals, but they are, generally speaking, a thoroughly detestable football club with people involved who are quite dislikable for various reasons that I won't go into on this podcast, but I think we're all aware of. And it's going to be great to see them get relegated. And, you know, we can, I think, put to one side what's going to happen next season and just sort of bask in the enjoyment of watching them self-destruct.
Here's a question for you, though. Who amongst you, Tass, is going to do the fan preview interview with an opposing fan? Like, who's going to take
all
that?
Of us.
Who's going
all
to take
us.
That one?
We'll ambush them. We'll set it up with one person and then six of us will join.
Face to face as well.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's wrap it up there. Hopefully we'll have, as you say, George, plenty of pods next season where we can talk all about Posh. We've got a midweek pod coming out this week with an Oxford preview and the review of Plymouth game. So you can look forward to that. But in the meantime, Tom, thank you very much, mate.
Yeah, thank you very much, too. Very, very pleasurable talking about that.
George, it's a pleasure as always.
Yeah, cheers, everyone.